From the Kramer Basketball Headquarters in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, you are listening to the Coach's Edge Podcast, powered by CoachesEdge.coach. Here is your host, Steve Kramer.
I'd like to welcome friend, University of Olivet head coach Sam Hargraves to the Coach's Edge podcast. Coach, thanks for taking the time to be on the show.
You got it, Steve. Wonderful way to spend a Sunday afternoon.
Hey, this is fantastic. We've already been chatting for a few minutes, and we dig into what players do, you know, without the basketball in their hands. How can we help players be more successful at the high school, at the college level? We're going to dig into how you create an atmosphere of, you know, confidence and togetherness and toughness, and also a message for, you know, athletes as they start to transition into, you know, the college process. And that could be relatable for even younger high school players who are maybe got moved up to varsity and things like that. So as we were emailing back and forth, there was a ton of great nuggets. And so I know people are going to get a lot out of the time that we spend together. But before we dive into that, why don't you give yourself a little bit of a background?
Sure. And I'm going to try to focus as much as I can as I get to look at that sweater you have on, because it's just so beautiful.
And
it's
we
so
might have cool. to like put this on YouTube as well, so everybody can enjoy, you know, not just make it an audio form.
You make me feel bad that I went all professional with my UO gear. I should have thrown on my ugly sweater, but yours isn't even that ugly. I think it looks great. It's very patriotic too.
I almost always rep a basketball shirt when I do the podcast. Mm-hmm. I would say I'm close to like 100%. But what I've recognized is there's only a short window where you can wear Christmas stuff.
Yes.
You got to do it.
Yes. Know? Tis the season.
Tis the season.
Always.
You're looking very professional in the U of O shirt. So go ahead and give us your background.
Yep. So I'm in my fifth year as the head men's coach at the University of Olivet, which we're in our first year as being the University of Olivet. It was Olivet College since 18. Oh gosh. I don't want to get it wrong. Sometime in the 1800s, it was Olivet College, but we made the transition this year. So that's been a neat thing. Previous to this, I was the head coach at Alma College for 8 years. And then previous to that, I was a assistant college coach for 13 years. Tried to recruit a young Steve Kramer once upon a time, unsuccessfully. Still hurts. And before that,
always have to bring that up. I never bring it up when we talk, but you always bring
it up. I can't help it. Because it didn't hurt you as much as it did me. It's a lot worse on the other end, right? It's a lot. You had a great experience. And then I just had to watch you be great at another school, which I can't stand that.
I'm sorry about that.
You really feel terrible, I'm sure. And then before that, I played and graduated from Calvin College in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You're familiar. Are you familiar with Calvin at all?
You know, this is the first time we've had somebody from Calvin on the podcast. It might be the last, depending on how this episode goes. You know,
might be the last podcast.
We're out on limbs. So, you know, if you're from Calvin, if you're from Hope, hopefully you can find some middle ground and enjoy this episode, you know, wherever you sit. But
only the Christmas season could bring us together to do this.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. Jesus is the reason for the season. And we're on here for that same reason. So perfect. I love it. So you talked about and actually we chatted a little bit, and I got to watch your coach's clinic in Charlevoix this fall. And you also talked about, you know, some screening and some cutting. And then you mentioned it again as we were emailing back and forth as far as what to do when players don't have the basketball in their hands. This is such a big transition, especially for high school players as they get to college. They are no longer playing on the basketball as much. So, you know, what are some things that, you know, you can take away and really teach to our coaches and our players that are listening?
Yeah. You know, so much in the game is cyclical. And by that, I mean and people will call it, well, it'll say that's the fad. It's this, the latest fad or this thing. And I say that just to go back in time a little bit. Now, you know, I'm going to sound old, and I'm not old, but I'm getting older. And for sure, when I played, and then, you know, as I was growing up watching the game, rule changes can have a bit of an effect on things. And so I think maybe Around the time of Allen Iverson, that's who I would probably be the first one really, and you know, not that he's going to listen to this, but where I think the rules changed and what you do with the basketball off the dribble became more liberal, let's say, or became more progressive, and you could do more. You could almost carry the ball more. From certainly when I was a kid and before, you had to have your hand more on top of the basketball. Okay, so I say that to say this, that in the 80s, 90s, maybe you had to do more off the ball because there was less talent on the ball with the ball. I think nowadays, and the rule changes maybe have something to do with that. So nowadays, kids are so talented with the basketball in their hand, and what they do is unbelievable. The one-on-one moves, the with the ball moves, the moves into a jump shot even were things that in my era, we really didn't see as much of that. You started to, you know, I graduated from college in 98. So, you know, the 3-point shot was a huge part of things, even at that time, even though my players don't think so, but the three-point shot was the only reason I even had a chance to play. But when I was growing up, everybody had a sense of curl, flare, and back cut. And those are my favorite three things in offense. And that's going to be off the ball action. And so everybody kind of knew, even just growing up playing 3-on-3 at my buddy's house, you know, one guy has the ball, the other two guys were doing something. And a lot of times that was some screening action for each other. And so playing 3-on-3, you know, you set a good down screen, you get a piece of the guy. Well, now if they don't switch and you make a nice hard curl cut, you're probably going to get a basket out of that. And so I just think over the last 20 years, we've gone away from that more. The spacing has gotten better in today's game, no doubt. But again, when I talk about things being cyclical, now sometimes just the space and play and the five out, or we'll see a lot of three guys standing, and then there's the ball screen action. And I love that too. I just don't love it all the time. And so what we try to do, and I think you'll see teams little by little over time here, there's gonna continue to be more off the ball action that starts to come back into play, and maybe even combined with the ball screen, and we try to do some of that. I think we're slowly gonna see post play come back, and for sure when I was growing up, and I do also think, you know, we're close enough that when you were growing up, post play was a big deal. And if you watch Division III basketball and you really watch the best teams in Division III basketball that are fortunate enough to have a kid who really can play with his back to the basket, you know, post play is alive and well in D3. I won't speak for the other levels as much because that's the level that I'm at. That's the level that I spend most of my time watching. So, you know, all that stuff. And I don't remember what the stat is. Gosh, I wish I could remember who I heard say this a couple years ago, but you know, let's say 90% of the time, maybe 95% of the time, you're playing a game, you don't have the ball in your hands. And so, man, we've got to focus on that. That's four guys 90% of the time don't have the ball in their hands. And so what are you going to do when you don't have it in your hand? And then I was a guy that I had to be good at playing that way, because I really very, very limited with what I could do off the dribble. So I had to learn how to play that way to survive. And I think when you get really good at playing motion basketball and you get five guys to understand how to play effectively without the ball in their hand, and then you add that maybe, I mean, in a dream of mine would be that I'd have five guys that are really good with the ball in their hand and then five guys that are also really good without the ball in their hand. And you combine that, and now I think your offense is going to be really, really hard to stop consistently.
So You brought up some great points. One, the ability to manipulate the ball, right, is different than it used to be. So that's
no question.
Advantage offense again. We talk about how some of the spacing has changed. Also, officiating, freedom of movement. We've changed the rules a little bit where, you know, if a player's dribbling the basketball and you give him a little check, that's going to be a foul. You know, I think we can all agree that, 15, 20, 30 years ago, the game was more physical with a ball handler and what you could do with them. That's something that I would like to see change. You know, watching even high school game film right now, I'm amazed at how little contact a defender is able to give a ball handler out on the perimeter and how much contact a defender is able to give a post player even before they post up. And it's not
for
a
sure.
And I was actually coaching and scouting at a combine, and we had two bigs on our team. And I mean, we're trying to throw it into the post. We had an advantage in the post, and guys were grabbing and holding and reaching and hooking on defense. And we could hardly even throw a post entry pass and complete it. And then I'm watching, the other team just dribble the ball a couple times and somebody bumps them and it's a foul. And, so it's my hope that we can get a little more balance because at the high school level, a lot of good teams still have post. At the D3 level, a lot of teams still have strong post play. And that's something that I'd like to see again at all levels from the NBA and high level college on down, a little more of that balance inside, outside, on ball and off ball play. You mentioned the curl, the flare, the back cut as being three, main cuts that you like to teach. How do you go about that? You're recruiting all these high school athletes. They're used to having the basketball in their hands. And then you come to college and, hey, this is going to be somebody that's more of a primary ball handler. Now you're going to be off the ball. You're going to be asked to screen more. What's the process that you have to work through with your guys?
Yeah. Well, it all starts in the recruiting, right? And, I'm at the Division III level, and I'm sure most of the listeners are going to know what that means. But for the couple that don't, that means we're non-scholarship. Okay. So I think most of us at this level, if we're smart, we're going to get the best players that we can get. I can't be that picky. Okay. If you're in the Big Ten, ACC, SEC, especially if you're at the top of that food chain, you're going to get Coach Beilein at Michigan. He would get he would get as close as he could want to getting players that fit his offensive system. Okay. The curl floor back cut, the motion, if I could choose it, that's how my team would always play. If you watch my teams, my first couple of years at Olivet, we didn't play that way because I had some guys that were ball dominant. And they were pretty good at it. So we played more that way, right? So I think every coach that's smart, you're going to take a look at the talent of your team and you're going to build your system that best fits the majority of your talent, right? Now, it might never be perfect for everybody on your team. It probably won't ever be perfect for everybody on your team. But are we a space and play team? Are we a ball screen? Are we an ISO team? Okay, so this year I have a motion team. I always talk, because the players can relate to it, we always talk about, are you a Klay Thompson or are you a Steph Curry within the guards? And what that means, a Steph Curry is the guy who can do everything and ridiculous handle and can shoot, get shots off. Klay Thompson is more of the 1-2 dribble guy, right? Klay Thompson needs more screening action. He needs help from his teammates to get him open. So that's more of what we have this year. Okay, so how do we start? So you have players that want to play that way, that fit playing that way. Now, if I were to get to guys when they're 14 years old and I was a high school coach, my whole program would play that way right from the get-go. Okay, but I get them when they're 18.
Right.
And they've had habits built. Sometimes I get them when they're 20 if they play JUCO maybe or transferred. So if I could build it, everybody would play that way. And then like we were talking about, then the better they are with the ball, that's only going to just make it more dangerous. Okay. But so this year we start out with, and this is most everything that's done nowadays is stolen, and you maybe make a little bit of tweak to it here and there. But I watched a Bobby Knight VHS coaching clinic when I was 20, 21 years old in my first year as an assistant coach at Alma College. And the way he broke his motion down, I just thought it was the best thing I'd ever seen, honestly. And so that's what we do. We start out with, we go 3-on-1. There's a passer, a cutter, and a screener, and there's a defender on the cutter. And that's an advantage drill. It's a 3-on-1 advantage drill, and it's all reading that guy guarding you. And when I say reading that guy guarding you, I mean you are literally – so there's a down screen coming for me. I am literally looking over my shoulder. I'm not staring at the basketball, which is what every kid does nowadays especially. I'm looking over my shoulder, and if he chases me, I'm curling. If he tries to jump ball side, strong side, you know, everybody's got to be on the same page with their terminology. But if he jumps and tries to go over the top of the screen, now I'm going to make the flare cut. If he muscles through and denies me, I'm going to let him deny me, and now I'm going to go back door. And that's where it starts. And you go 3-on-1, then we go 3-on-2 and guard the screener. Then we go 3-on-3 and guard the ball handler. Then we go 4-on-4. Then we go 5-on-5.
How much of this?
That's simple, and it takes hours and hours and hours.
That's what I was going to say, is the process and like, okay, the explanation, hey, here's the reads, here's what we're looking for, understanding the actions that you're taking place. And then obviously you need a play. And then from there, I'm assuming you're going to stop. You're going to reteach some things, maybe walk through some things, and it just continues to circle and snowball, correct?
Yes. It's absolutely tedious. It's like whatever your least favorite class was in college that gave you just hours of ridiculous little homework assignments that you had to do. That's what it is. And so it will be ugly in the beginning. You'll be frustrated. You know, and so you can do it little by little, maybe, but to really to be a motion team, you've got to commit years to it if you want it to be a part of your program, if you want it to be what your program is about. And man, like I said, the younger you can start them doing it, you know, the better it is, obviously, because it doesn't matter what you do, right? It doesn't matter what you do. It is muscle memory. Cannot be replaced. You need repetition at what you're going to do. No different than shooting free throws, shooting your jump shot. That is muscle memory. And reading screens is muscle memory. Our whole thing is based on reading the defense, reading your defender. Your defender will tell you what cut to make if you allow him to. And that takes hours and hours of muscle memory.
Okay, so my next question is, how do you teach that initial screen? There's an action. And then let's say we didn't read the screen correctly. Let's say, okay, we kind of read it correctly, but hey, the defense did a nice job.
Yep.
They had a nice switch or a hedge or recovery, whatever it might be. So we're not getting a shot on that initial action. Sure. I think that's so hard for a lot of people to understand is here's the action. Oh, wait, we didn't get the shot. Something didn't work. And then all of a sudden we just freeze and pause. Well, if you run a motion, I mean, that's not how good offense works, right?
Right.
How do you go from, okay, that first layer of passer, screener, cutter, and the read into, okay, this needs to flow into multiple actions and five of us working cohesively on the court.
Yep. Yep. And you said it, what's the offense called? It's called motion. So motion, you know, for us, that means for 30 seconds or until somebody takes a shot, we are in motion, we are moving. And this is where it gets the most complex. And anytime you play anybody good, we're never going to get a shot the first two screens against anybody any good. It'll never happen. Once or twice a game, right? Which I also say, which is why I think anybody, any coach in America, I don't care if you have the 5 slowest players in the world, run, transition, offense, because I don't want to play against Steve if he's set, the thought of you guarding me when you're set and ready, I got a big problem. But I don't mind playing against you if it's 4-on-2. Now you have a problem. Okay, so I'll get off my fast break soapbox there, but run. My goodness, you don't want to play against set defense. Okay, so we've made our initial curl. And here's the best thing. Boy, I probably shouldn't say this, but don't put this out for a couple months, okay? But I'm kidding. But the best thing.
It's the holiday season. We got to put it. Just if do this next secret, just don't say it. Just don't.
Yeah.
Come back on later.
Right. The best thing a defender can do, I'm going to chase you and make you think I'm chasing you. And then as soon as you take your eye off me, I'm going to slide underneath the screen. So you curl right into me. Okay. That's the best thing a defender can do. And really the cutter versus the defender, it's a total game of chicken or chess, man, whatever you want to call it. Who can outfox who within that little two-man game? And that's what it is. We have a guy with the ball. We have a two-man game on one side of the floor. We have a two-man game on the other side of the floor. That's kind of how we start, but not always. And this is where you can put in, it's limitless how you would want to start, and it's limitless how you would want to play after that first pass gets made, right?
That's what I wanted to hear. Could you give us an example? Because you said, you know, we're probably going to run a couple screening actions and not going to get anything yet.
Yep.
Would be an example of, hey, here's an action that we go into another action that eventually, you know, we might manufacture a good look.
Yep. Okay. So that's where we're going to. So let's say the point guard, there's a down screen on the left wing, point guard hits the cutter that came off it. And now he's got the ball. Didn't get a shot, right? Okay. So now we're going to have a two-man game, ball side. And then we're going to have a three-man game on the weak side. Okay. So what does that two-man ball side game look like? Our screener, which is typically our big, but not always, but typically it is. Our rules, and you almost everybody's going to put in some rules for some structure, right? So our big set the down screen, our guard comes off, catches it at the three-point line. And like you were saying, the defense did a good job. We didn't get anything out of it. Our big guy is now going to post up, or he's going to set a ball screen on the wing. And that's for right now, for my team, that's it. That's what we're doing without a little special situation maybe. Okay. So now we go into the wing ball screen. Let me go to this now. So our point guard who passed it to that wing, we give him two rules right now. He has got to make an immediate hard basket cut, or he's got to go screen away for the other wing on the weak side to bring that wing up. Because it's just basic. Everybody in America to some level wants side, top, side action, right? That'll never go away. Okay, so that's basically what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And then we're doing that over and over and over until somebody gets a shot.
Then you can swing back to the top. You got another screen action on the other side. They pop out. Yes. Let's say they curl on the other side. So we came, we popped out on that left wing. We caught it. Say we screened away, come back up to the top of the key. Ball's now passed back to the top of the key. And then from there, do we have another screen action over there?
Yeah, absolutely.
Are you running generally like player screens out of the corner, player screens out of the wing?
More wing. We like to keep it. Here's a great rule, I think, no matter what you do. I hate the corner pass unless it's for a shot or a drive or an immediate post entry or hitting somebody on a back cut, let's say, all because of the spacing, right? We want the ball free throw line extended and above as much as possible. But of course I love the corner three. So we throw it there when we have an advantage, but if you throw it there, now you don't have the angles, you don't have the spacing, you don't have the options except on the ball side. That's it. It's cause you got to throw a long skip pass now. So something great, there might've been an amazing flare that took place on the weak side, but we threw it to the corner. Well, now we can't, now we can't hit that flare, right? Mm-hmm. So the more the ball stays up top, the more options it gives you to pass, to attack on either side, right?
And what would be an example of, like, so the ball got swung back to the top. Let's say, you know, it was a pass to the left after a down screen pop. Yep. After I passed it, I cut down to the paint like you're talking about. Opposite wing fills the top of the key. They get the yep. ball back. And then let's say I curl off of, you know, yes. another screen. Yes. So I curl off yes. there and I don't get it. What would be, I think this is great for coaches. I think you're doing a pretty good job of painting the picture, because I know, like, this is a challenge on audio, as you know, like you're trying yeah. to paint the picture of the court just using your words only. You know, you at the level that you're at, I mean, you got five guys a lot of times that can pop off of somebody curls and light that three. I mean, is that a common look that you guys have?
For sure. No question. Yep. Is it? I think in general, if you have screeners and typically your four and your five, if your four and your five can shoot the ball, this stuff is deadly, right? Mm-hmm. I think it's the best way to play. I mm-hmm. truly think it's the best way to play. If you've got, and in high school, you know, and it's funny, Steve, because even at the Division I level, sometimes there might be a 6'10 guy who can jump out of the gym and he's strong and he can rebound, but he can't shoot at all, right? So you don't have to guard that guy at all. So many teams in Division III are going to be maybe a little bit undersized at the 4-5. So they've got a 6'5 guy who's 210, but oh my gosh, can he shoot? He can shot fake and drive, right? So the more versatile your players are, certainly the better it is. But even with that, you know, now you got to think about, okay, we're going to run this motion, but I want you get into an area where you can't do anything, screen your way back into an area where you can do something, right? And that's a big concept there. There's always ways. Say it again.
That's a huge concept. Like, that's a
huge concept. Don't hang out in areas where you're not effective for a second. Yes. But then get back to where you can do something. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so that's, we spend a lot of time with our guys. Okay. So my big guy set a great back screen on the wing, but he's not a shooter. So he's got to get out of there, right? Mm-hmm. You throw it to your big guy and he can't shoot the three. Okay. So maybe his defender's sagging way off him in the lane. All right. But what can he do now? He can take one dribble mm-hmm. and set a dribble handoff, which is a dribble handoff into a ball screen, right? Well, because he can't shoot, his man's back in the paint. If I hand it off to Steve, Steve takes one dribble, raises up and shoots a wide open 17, 15 footer, mm-hmm. right? They can't switch it because the big guy. So you're always within the five man motion concepts. What are the best areas for Steve to play in based on what he can do? Mm-hmm. And so I always want them playing to their strengths, and I don't really want them doing things that they can't do unless right. the shot clock's at two.
It's such a great point. And I think that's where I see a lot of high school players get stuck. Cause I mean, those are mostly the players that I work with and the teams that I work with high school level. And you know, you'll see a player who's not comfortable in a certain area. So they'll go stand in a spot that they're more comfortable with, instead of, like, well, now you're just standing next to somebody. You should have just screened them.
Yes.
Right? Like, yes. Don't go stand next to someone, screen them. Right. And I can go on the whole defensive side of what I don't like as well, is like when players cross each other, like, would you just check somebody and bump them a little bit? Like,
for sure.
Let them cross past. But on the offensive side, you know, if you cut and somebody's in that spot, well, don't stare at each other, set a screen for them. Yeah. And then oh, they can. Yeah. Right. If I'm a post player, like you said, and I can't shoot and there's a guard down there, well, I'm not going to go stand and post up next to the guard. I'm going to screen for the guard. Then I'm going to, you know, little things like that are,
you got it.
It seems kind of obvious, but boy, yeah.
My assistant, my assistant every day, it just drives him insane. He's like, why would you walk by somebody wearing a different color jersey, especially, you know, the most motivated screeners should be guys that can shoot. Mm. because I want to make my man help. Because so why don't be like two battleships just going back and forth, right? Like the Mackinac Island ferry boats. Don't be like the Scheffler's ferry boats. When you go by somebody, hit them. Don't move. Don't cheap shot them. Jump stop and hit them.
The most
when we get really mad, Steve, we just make our guys jump stop all around the gym and just turn their and just fake screen the air.
The screen everywhere in the whole gym. I love it. That's beautiful. The one we've mentioned this a little bit already that I see is open all the time is the curl to pop for a three. Like if I'm bringing the ball down and I'm the shooter and I pass to the left and then I'll down screen. Maybe it's more like at the elbow area for the opposite wing.
Yep.
And then they curl this thing. If they curl hard and I immediately just pop back up to the top, boom, catch and shoot. Like that's been open on some game film that I've been watching so much. It's so simple. But being able to bring the defense down and hard cut, at least for a second, is drawing those two guys. They got to pay attention a little bit. And then just lifting back up to the same spot you started with has been wide open.
Are you, and I believe it's called the elbow series out of the Princeton offense. Have you looked at the Princeton stuff much?
I'm not like expert.
Okay.
In Princeton.
They've had kind of three different ways. I'm going to probably screw this up, but there's chin, there's elbow, and there's low. I believe that's how they used to break it down back in the Pete Carrill days. And so their elbow entry, that is one of their offenses that they run, right? I don't want to call it a set. It's not a set play.
No.
It is a continuity structured motion offense. Mm-hmm. And they run that so beautifully. And lots of college teams run that exact action. Kalamazoo College does a good job. That's a big staple of what they run to get open shots.
It's a great action. And if you don't have the shot, it immediately gets you back into your ball reversal and well-spaced and all that good stuff. Yeah. We could talk off-ball movement all the time, but there's a couple things that while I have you that I want to make sure we touch on as well. At Olivet and anywhere that you go, I think something that has always stood out to me and I've always had a lot of respect for you is just some culture, right? Building togetherness. How do you go about, as a head college coach and recruiting and creating an atmosphere, confidence, toughness, togetherness as a group?
Yeah, and man, we're trying to do it right now too. It's just crazy. We're right in the middle of it right now, and we don't really have that confidence right now. And so how do you get that? I just think it's a process just like everything else. I have a really interesting makeup on my team because I have two seniors that have played more minutes than most seniors in the country. And then I have a bunch of guys that have hardly played at all. So, bringing them together, building that chemistry. Number one, and Coach K said this years ago, and it just stuck in my brain. He's like, everybody talks about our culture and this and how I build these guys and do it. And he goes, listen, I recruit character. That's the number one thing is I recruit character. Does he take them and make them better and, around the edges? For sure. We all try to do that. But number one, if you want great chemistry, you have to recruit guys who are going to fit together. Now, if you're coaching at high school, you're at the mercy of the families that are living in your school district, right? So it can be tougher. But number one, I think the players have to know you believe in them. They have to know that you care about them as people, not just as somebody who's trying to win games for you. You have to truly, sincerely be interested in them as people, and you cannot fake that. That's got to be authentic. But I think most coaches do. I really do. And most high school coaches, I don't know. I'll speak for the Michigan high school coaches. They're making $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 to do this, right? So they're not doing it for money, which is obviously a motivator in our human existence. It is. I hope it's not the number one for too many people, but so that authentic caring, and players can sense that, right? They might not even be able to describe it or explain it, but they can sense my motivation and where that's coming from. And then this is the one that I think is tougher. And for any coach that's been in a situation where they're kind of starting from scratch with their team and their program, you have to stay positive and you can't get frustrated and you can't waver from your vision at all. And it's going to be really hard, because when you lose, everything is bad, and the coach is bad and the players are bad. And the bus that you take to the games is bad. The pizza's bad. The AD's bad. And it's always somebody's fault when you're losing. It's just human nature. It's the way it is. And then when you're winning, everything, the coach is amazing. The pizza's amazing. The bus is amazing. And it's not true. The reality is somewhere in between both of those two things.
That's a great point.
It's a neat thing when you're building something that's at a really low spot, mm-hmm. Because you get to go through that whole process step by step.
We'll talk a little bit about that process for high school players that, like you said, you got a pretty inexperienced group from a college experience standpoint. How do you work with them as far as developing patience throughout a process and a season? And as we were talking earlier, you guys have, you know, probably one of the tougher schedules in the country.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's the best example I can give you. And it's so fresh because it just happened at 5 o'clock yesterday. We had 6 points with 7:36 left in the first half of a college game. We lost 90-73, and so it got better. And it started to go in a little bit more. And so, all right, so how am I going to handle this? You know, I can just lose my mind and be so mad. And why can't you guys shoot? I don't know too many players that have ever missed on purpose. You remember the movie Blue Chips? Remember Tony? Tony missed on purpose because Tony fixed a game. Mm. Okay, so if your player outside of your players fixing a game, I don't think they're missing on purpose.
I don't think so.
But it could happen, right? It happened in Blue Chips, which of course that, you know, if it's on TV, it's real. Right. Our guys weren't trying to miss on purpose yesterday. And we had 18 assists on 26 made baskets. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but that's a really, really high successful percentage. And so if we just keep believing, and if I come in and paint a picture of how impressed I am with that stat, and now just think if we would have shot even 48% yesterday, which isn't, that's not unrealistic. It's not crazy. We're trying to shoot 50% every game. That's our goal. 50, 40, 80 from the free throw line, 40 from three. And so if we'd have just maybe shot 45, 48%, Steve, we might have had 25 assists, okay? And we might have won. So that's just an example of, you know, how do you as the leader, how do you as the head, because the head coach is the leader. You have to have players that are leaders, but you're their leader. And so what kind of an attitude, today's our day off, tomorrow we're back at it. What kind of an attitude am I going to go in there with tomorrow? Because that'll have a big, big influence on the tone of the practice tomorrow. It's going to have a big influence on their attitude. And I have very little to be upset about from our loss yesterday, except the fact that the ball didn't go in. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And now it's not always that case, right? But I have guys who are unselfish, who are absolutely sharing the ball. They're playing hard on D. But we're not confident yet. And the only way we get confident is we have to beat a team like we played yesterday. Mm-hmm. To beat a team like we played yesterday, we're going to have to shoot through the fear and the lack of confidence. Mm-hmm. And once it happens, it's unbelievable how, you know, it's not like an immediate fix, right? But every little bit, they do a little bit better. In the next game, they do a little bit better and it goes in a little bit more. And then our defense gets a little bit better. And it shouldn't be that way. Our confidence should totally come from our defense. That's easy to say, and it's hard to do when you continue to miss and continue to miss. It affects the Michigan State Spartans, as we've seen this year.
Saw that. You watch them play against Baylor yesterday?
Holy. And then look what they did yesterday, right? Mm-hmm. Right? So it took a little bit. And those guys, you're talking about some of the most talented basketball players in the country. But they did it. They broke through. And they did it. And so, you know, that's where my team happens to be at right now. You know, the teams that you and I played on in college, as soon as I stepped foot on campus, I was totally confident in my team. I wasn't super confident in myself, honestly, when I was not quite yet an 18-year-old freshman. But man, I figure I can let some shots fly, and my 4 and 5 and my 3 will probably just go get it if I miss. So that's easy, right?
It's never easy
to win anywhere.
No.
But it is easier to win if you've got talent around you.
Yeah.
Just a fact of the game.
I want to go back to what you mentioned before, and you mentioned tone and how the coach can set the tone. You know, you lose a game, tough game, you know, a game that, you know, after looking back and you said, looking at stats and 6 points with, you know, 7 minutes to go in the first half, certainly gives you a taste in your mouth. Like, boy, we should have won that game. Shoulda, woulda, coulda. But the tone that you set after the game at halftime in that next practice is everything, right? You're going to keep it lemons. You're going to make it lemonade, and that can start to, you know, open the eyes. And I think the mindset of certain players to, you know, look at things a little more growth minded, a little less fixed, and give themselves an opportunity to be successful moving forward. So I think that those are some great nuggets right there. And talk a little bit, as we were chatting before, as we finish this out, just, I love what you mentioned before we hit record about scheduling tough. Yeah. And you guys schedule tough. And I think you're going to Florida, and then you're going to Wisconsin, and then you start the MIAA, and it's, you know, you're playing Hope, and then you're playing Trine, and then you're playing Albion, and like a really tough schedule coming up. But you love that. I love that. There's different philosophies out there, but talk to us about, you know, why you love scheduling so tough.
Two reasons. One, to get, everybody wants to win. Everybody wants to win. The most obvious statement of the day. Okay. So how do you get there? And there's different philosophies on that. My philosophy, and I'm not going to say right or wrong how anybody thinks on this, but my philosophy is that if we want to get our program to be able to get to the point where we can win a championship, we have to be able to beat the current people that are winning the championship. The only way you're going to do that, number one, you have to get players that are somewhat comparable, at least close, right? But number two, you have to beat them. You have to get used to playing them. There's no other way. And so I don't mind losing during the building process to get them used to being in the battle as many times as possible. Because what you just said about our league is so true. We don't have one guaranteed win on our league schedule. And I bet if you talk to the coaches at the three best teams in our league right now, they would say the same thing, that they don't have a guaranteed win in our league on their schedule. And all three of them are really smart. So I think that's how smart coaches think. For sure. There's absolutely examples of the top two teams in the league. As long as they get the bus there on time and nobody's, you know, playing with one arm tied behind their back, they're going to beat the bottom two teams in their league. And in high school, that can happen so much where you're just going to roll out there and win. Even if you play awful, you're going to roll out there and win. College, not so much like that in most leagues. So I love our set because we play 13 non-conference games, and then we have our conference, 14 games. So it's two very split seasons And it's really split mentally too. It's incredible. So the pressure of playing good people and the pressure of playing big games, intense moments, I'm using those 13 games as much as I possibly can to get ready for those 14 games. Okay, so here's the main argument that I hear against what I do is, well, coach, you're just going to bury your guys. You're just going to bury them mentally because they're just going to lose. They're going to get beat down. I agree with that. If I bury them,
you get buried.
I beat them down because I can't handle the losing. Mm-hmm. And so it just turns into frustration and anger. Okay, so, and believe me, I got to fight my human nature on that, right? Yeah. You know how bad I wanted to yell at my guys yesterday mm-hmm. when we started 3 of 22 from the field, but I can't yell at them because there
was trying to miss a shot, like you said.
No. Now, are there, but more, even more than that, there wasn't one bad or selfish shot taken.
Shot selection.
That's when I lose my mind.
The shot selection. You're happy with the effort. It's just not going.
We're not quite ready yet. Michigan State, they weren't quite ready some of those games mm-hmm. for whatever reason. Now that shots,
you know,
that's a whole nother pot.
It is. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
No. It's a whole nother podcast. We could talk about why they're missing, but let's not, that's another hour.
Okay.
That's where it's mental
though, right? That's where it's mental because as a coach, if I can continue, like, it's not like you don't have players that aren't capable of making those shots. Are they capable? Yes. Check that box. Are we executing properly? Okay. Yep. We checked that box. So they're capable of making it. We have the execution. What's the decision making? Right. We're making the right choices as far as when to pass, when to shoot. Okay. We checked that box. Right. And then there's the mental side of that, where as a coach, you play a huge role in feeding positivity into your guys, saying, hey, we're checking these boxes. These are the right shots. You're capable of making them. You know, they're going to fall. And I think that it starts with like one guy just seeing it go through a couple times. And maybe it's a layup. Yes. Maybe it's a couple free throws. Maybe it's that wide open three that's off of like a broken play. And then that next, you know, curl into a kick out three gets a little bit easier. And then you just start to see it, you know, kind of trickle down to everybody else. And then that's where the game gets fun. That's not really a question there. It was just like some thoughts on that.
Oh, you're right on. You know how the missing trickles down.
Yeah, the same.
And then the making trickles down, right? Mm-hmm. Great chemistry just gets better. Terrible chemistry just gets worse.
Right.
So it all, the good and the bad all feeds itself.
Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's a message to our coaches that are listening, is you have so much control over those things. Like as a coach, you can't go out there and shoot a jump shot for a kid. You can't make a certain read for a player. But your effect goes beyond that, with the tone that you have, with the attitude that you have, and the words that you speaking life into your kids is huge. Coach Hargrave is a great example of that. And coach, I just want you to get the chance to finish this out. Any last words of wisdom, as you know, a lot of our listeners and coaches around the country are, you know, they're into the season. You know, they're probably not halfway through the season yet, as you're not halfway through the season yet, but they're kind of in the mix. You know, Christmas is coming up that time of year, and then they're getting ready for a league run.
Yeah. I think a big thing too, and for everybody who's in a position where I am right now, where you don't have a culture to fall back on, right? You don't have that winning culture to fall back on. We're trying to build this thing right now. And if there's process driven thinking and there's result driven thinking. And if I'm just super focused on the result right now, I'm not going to give the players what they need. That goes right to making shots. We did our process yesterday, was great. And that's all I'm focused on. The result, if I hammer on them because they didn't make enough shots, well, they already feel terrible that they didn't make enough of those shots. So we are focused on the process of what we're trying to do. There's one game I'm only very much result oriented, and that's the last game of the season that if we lose, we're done. Now I don't care if we play like garbage. I just hope the ball went in a bunch of times for whatever reason, and then we'll try to fix it the next day in practice. But right now, we got a long, and so does everybody listening, you got a long road to go. The beautiful thing about high school, at least in Michigan, everybody makes a state tournament. So it doesn't matter if you're 20-0 or 0-20, you're in. You got a chance to make that magical run that we all want to do. Not quite so much for us. You know, we got to make the top six of eight, or every league is a little bit different. But until you're at that point, focus on the guys or girls doing what you want them to do, and let that be the thing that you go to bed at night thinking about.
Coach, this was awesome chatting with you. I learned a lot. I got a handful of notes written down in front of me, and I've grown from the time that we've spent together. Best wishes to you as you go throughout the course of the season. You know, thanks again for being a guest on the Coach's Edge.
Love it. Love talking to you, Steve.
Thanks for listening. Get after it today.